It's a playground next to a bar. Welcome to Quarantine, aka Quarantine, aka Quarantine Anima, the only podcast where we don't know how to say the name of the show. My name is Connor Sullivan. Thank you very much for joining us today. It's episode 198. Holy shit. We are slowly coming towards, well, quickly, I guess. Yeah, we're quickly coming towards episode 200. So we're going to use episode 198 to talk about probably one of the funnier movies to come out in post-2010. Very, very interesting time for comedy. And, you know, we've gone into it many, many different times here. And, you know, we've talked about, you know, comedy in the 90s and then, you know, in the 2000s, there's this transition to guys like Will Ferrell and Vince Vaughn and Owen Wilson and Ben Stiller and, you know, guys like that. And then, you know, there's this transition to the Judd Apatow crew, Seth Rogen, James Franco, Paul Rudd, you know, that whole gang. Although Paul Rudd was actually, you know, well, I mean, he's an Anchorman, but so is Seth Rogen, technically. Jason Segel, Jonah Hill, that whole crew. And then after they started to fizzle out a little bit, there was, not fizzle out, but just like that, like they were, you know, that prime was over of, you know, those Apatow guys just not losing their fastball necessarily, but, you know, they took a little bit off of it. I feel like I have a sneeze coming. It's going to come and I'm going to sneeze in the podcast, but oh man, this is not comfortable. Okay. but anyway, there was this, this really weird lull, called around 2010. Where the R-rated studio comedies are, you know, all the rage. You have, you know, in addition to all those Judd Apatow movies, you know, This Is the End, Pineapple Express, you know, Step Brothers, oh God, what else is there? Forgetting Sarah Marshall, Superbad. I mean, like, so you have that whole era and movies like that, but then you get, you know, guys, some movies that are outside the Apatow family. You know, you have the Hangover trilogy, you have Neighbors, 21 Jump Street, Ted, just to name a few. So R-rated comedies were the thing at the time. And part of like the transitive property of, you know, R-rated comedies, you know, you keep having, you had to keep pushing boundaries of what you could and couldn't do to get, you know, get a laugh out of people. And nowadays, you know, with, you know, PC culture and, you know, these big studios are becoming more and more aware of, you know, cancel culture and things like that. And, you know, it's a lot harder to put money into something that's ultimately going to get that can ultimately get people in a lot of trouble. So, and just for jokes, my dad, which, you know, I believe comedy is comedy. I believe that not all comedy is, you know, people don't go around trying to hurt other people. Yes, people do that. But, you know, I feel like most comedy is not designed to hurt. It's designed to laugh. And, you know, people have different sensibilities and things like that. And one of the things that, you know, this has done is, like, it's pretty much eliminated studio comedies from the mainstream over the last, you know, 5+ years or so. So it's been interesting to see, nonetheless. But that being said, just before they all went away, well, not all, I shouldn't say all, but just before, you know, these R-rated, you know, mainstream comedies with, you know, elite actors was just pretty much a thing of the past. Because, I mean, really, a lot of these guys have gone on to do other things. Like, yeah, Seth Rogen is, you know, one of the very few names that can still, you know, he's still bankable. You know, he can still kind of do what he wants, but he's just kind of like attained that level in his career. But other guys, not so much. You know, people move on, you know, and like in the movie today, we're talking about today, Horrible Bosses, one of my favorite movies of the last 10 years or so. Jason Bateman, you know, child star background, you know, kind of broke into comedy a little bit with Arrested Development. Then he, you know, he goes off and has a pretty successful series of movies, actually. He's one of the, you know, he's a straight man, so I feel like people don't necessarily associate Jason Bateman with, like, you know, Jason Bateman is hilarious, but he really is. you know, being a straight man is not an easy thing to do. And Horrible Bosses was a key moment for his career. And, you know, it's not that he was, you know, wasn't anywhere to be seen. You know, there was, you know, he had done Juno, he had done Arrested Development, Smoking Aces and Hitch and, you know, a couple other things. He'd done some, threw some dramatic roles in there too. But when you see Horrible Bosses, it, you know, it's this big hit. You know, then we start seeing him kind of doing his own brand of, you know, comedy. You know, we see him in Identity Thief. We see him in, well, Horrible Bosses too, obviously. This Is Where I Leave You, Zootopia, Central Intelligence. So he's, well, I guess he's kind of in that one. Game Night, another very funny movie. Game Night's hilarious. I actually kind of want to watch that one again. But, you know, he eventually switches over to dramas. Ozark, he's directed many episodes of that. You know, he's obviously the star in it. Yeah, there's some comedic elements to it, but it's a drama. That show is a drama note. Probably the closest thing to Breaking Bad, I think, that we have on TV today. And, you know, in addition to that, he's directed a lot of that. He's directed 10 episodes of that. There was this show on HBO that came out last year called The Outsider. He acted in that, but he also directed a few episodes of that. So, you know, he's kind of moved into this, like, dramatic field. Jason Sudeikis, another interesting guy. Well, yeah, Jason Sudeikis, another interesting cast member here who, I mean, Jason Sudeikis is hysterical. He's one of the best comedic actors out there, I think. You know, ever since his days on SNL, you know, he was this kind of like guy who could do everything. You know, he could be a straight man. He could play these wild and silly characters. He could do impressions. He could do, you know, music. And I mean, he could do anything. Anything they wanted him to do on SNL, he could. And you know, he was on the show when I was consuming the most of it, you know, and that was the era with like Bill Hader and Andy Samberg, Kristen Wiig. I think all four of them were actually in the same class together, or they're featured at the same time. But, you know, you also had Will Forte on the show, Amy Poehler and Maya Rudolph. There would have been some crossover there, I guess. But Cecily Strong and Vanessa Bayer, Kate McKinnon. I mean, Jason Sudeikis is... Kyle Mooney. Kyle Mooney used to be really funny, but not so much anymore. Bobby Moynihan, very funny. But yeah, Jason Sudeikis is, you know, one of the better SNL performers, I think. One of the more underrated ones, too, just because he could do so many things. I don't really think he had that, like, signature character. You know, yeah, he had the two a-holes, and, you know, he played Jesus a couple times. My favorite skit of his is it's Main Law, or something like that, Main Justice. And it's this like courtroom TV drama, you know, that takes place in Maine, but he basically plays this like he plays the judge, but he kind of plays this like Colonel Sanders, kind of like Bayou Louisiana guy. Like everything in the courtroom is, you know, they just make it seem like it's like the Bayou, but they keep calling it Maine, like justice. And finally Bobby Moynihan is just like, yeah, what the hell's going on in here? And then, you know, I don't know, his whole fucking impression that he does is hilarious. But, you know, then he goes off and, you know, he's found success in every medium, really. TV, whether he's, you know, just a featured guy. You know, we've seen him pop up in things like Portlandia, Eastbound and Down, you know, other movies. You know, he does this. This movie kind of establishes him as a leading man in film for a little bit. Not that, you know, we'd seen him in some other stuff, mostly in supporting roles, though. You know, things like The Campaign, Movie 43, Hall Pass. Well, Hall Pass was a leading role for him, I guess, alongside Owen Wilson, which came out. Actually, that came out the same year. Yeah, Horrible Bosses and Horrible Bosses and Hall Pass came out in the same year. So good year for Jason Sudeikis there. And don't forget about the very underrated 2011 comedy, A Good Old-Fashioned Orgy. I don't know where it's playing now, if at all, but very funny movie. Jason Sudeikis, Tyler Labine, Lake Bell, Leslie Bibb, Nick Kroll, Will Forte is in there for a little bit, Angela Serafin. Very, very funny movie. Martin Starr, if you ever get a chance to go see A Good Old-Fashioned Orgy, Don't let the title deceive you. It's actually pretty fun. Yeah, no, so after 2011, he does that. He does Horrible Bosses. We start seeing him kind of become this leading man. He gets We're the Millers, Horrible Bosses 2, Sleeping with Other People with Alison Brie. Very, very good movie, if I do say so myself. One of the better romantic comedies, I think, of the last few years. And then the thing that I think we all know and love him for now is Ted Lasso. He eventually crosses into the TV game. Well, he'd already been doing TV game, but he takes this character that was essentially a it's like something that they shot for an English Premier League commercial, and they turned it into a show like many years later. And it's quite the opposite. Like, it's still R-rated, yeah, but it's at the same time like the most like positive, feel good comedy on TV right now. Oh man, we're almost 11 minutes into this. I feel like I've barely talked about Horrible Bosses. Anyway, we've talked about Jason Statham and Jason Bateman. But so we might as well talk about Charlie Day while we're at it. Charlie Day, this was a huge moment in his career. Always Sunny, he's always going to be Charlie Day or Charlie Kelly from Always Sunny in Philadelphia. That's just going to be his thing. It's the funniest sitcom, arguably the funniest sitcom of all time. Ask me on a different, any different day, you'll probably get a couple different answers, but Always Sunny in Philadelphia is always near the top of the list. That's definitely my top three funniest sitcoms of all time. And they're still going strong. It's still funny after all these years. But anyway, so he's been, he's been doing Always Sunny in Philadelphia since what, like 2005. Pays his dues, pops up in a couple of, a few movies here and there, in supporting roles. 2011, that's his first like real like leading role in a movie, Horrible Bosses. And then he starts blowing up. We see him on a, he hosts SNL. He does Pacific Rim with Guillermo del Toro, the Lego Movie, Horrible Bosses 2, I don't remember him in Vacation. Lego Movie again, Fist Fight with Ice Cube, another Pacific Rim movie after that. So, like, he goes off and he does a couple of great movies, and I mean, but he's always had Always Sunny, and in his back pocket. So, I mean, he is so funny. He is so talented. Just the what they he's been able to do with Charlie Kelly as a character. He's actually a very talented musician as well. In fact, he's actually got his directional debut coming out. I think it was supposed to come out this year, but it didn't for who knows what reason at this point. It's called El Tonto, and the description on IMDb is a fool for love becomes an accidental celebrity only to lose it all. And I think it's supposed to be like a silent movie or something like that, or a silent character or something along those lines. But listen to this cast. You got Kate Beckinsale, Jason Sudeikis, Adrian Brody, and Charlie Day is the titular character. Jason Sudeikis, Adrian Brody, Jimmy Simpson, who's one of one of the McBoyle twins from Always Sunny in Philadelphia. You've probably also seen him on Westworld. Movie also has Edie Falco, Ray Liotta, John Malkovich, Dennis Reynolds himself, Glenn Howerton, Dean Norris, Ken Jeong, Common, Mary Elizabeth Ellis, who is his real life wife, and she's also the waitress on Always Sunny. I mean, just an absolutely phenomenal cast, and I can't wait to see it. We've seen like a still from it at some point, but no trailer, no release date, no nothing yet. So I'm waiting on El Tonto. I'm very, very excited to see that. All right, let's actually talk about the movie. So Horrible Bosses is fucking hysterical. If you haven't seen it, it is a very, very simple plot. Basically, three friends hate their jobs. They hate their bosses. So they come up with this kind of like strangers on a train plot to kill each other's bosses so that they won't be found culpable of killing their own boss. And they get this plan from one of Jamie Foxx's best performances. Movie also includes Jamie Foxx. Kevin Spacey plays excuse me, Kevin Spacey plays Jason Bateman's boss. Jennifer Aniston plays Charlie Day's boss. And Colin Farrell, of all people, plays Jason Sudeikis' boss. Very, very funny role for him. But they get the idea courtesy of Jamie Foxx's character, whose character name is Motherfucker Jones. Motherfucker Jones is a hilarious character. And it's all right. It's really tough to talk about comedies on here without just saying it's like hilarious or just, you know, dropping lines here and there. But just everything about Motherfucker Jones, A, from his name, B, to his appearance, B, C, you know, his backstory about how he gets his name, you know, how he just kind of fucks over his mom, but he led people to believe that, you know, he fucked his mom. And then, you know, his horrible negotiating tactics where he always just shoots for the moon and then kind of reels him in just a little bit. And then he's like, what was it? He wanted like $10,000 or something. They said no. He's like, all right, 5,000. They said no. And he's like, all right, we'll just pay for my drinks. just horrible negotiator. Very, very funny, though. I mean, the chemistry between Sudeikis, Bateman, and Kelly is, Charlie Day, is absolutely, you know, electric. You know, the movie was popular enough to warrant a sequel, a pretty good one, might add. Comedy sequels aren't easy to do. And especially, you know, it's so easy to fall into a trope of just redoing the first one, you know, similar gags, bigger cast, you know, things like that. And yeah, they have the bigger cast, you know, all the same players are back. Plus like Christoph Waltz is in there. I think, Chris Pine is in there. I had to pause. I didn't know if it was Hemsworth or Pine. But yeah, I mean, it all comes back from this very simple comedy, you know, and it's just a good old fashioned R-rated, you know, mid, you know, 2011 jam, frankly, you know, a lot of the humor in it, probably doesn't fly today. You know, I can definitely think of a bunch of jokes off the top of my head in this one that, do not bear repeating, but if this movie came out today, it wouldn't come out today, to be frank. And like, it, like I was saying before, like this was one of the last great like studio comedies before they just kind of stopped coming out, before everyone became just a lot more, I don't know, before studios started becoming a lot more woke and stuff like that. But I feel like I've talked about that a lot. So but I mean, everything from, you know, that the dynamic that these guys have, you know, so there's so many running gags in here, you know, the whole Charlie Day's character is you know, he's on a sex offender list because, like he peed on a playground or once. And there's that whole, like, you know, who puts a playground next to a bar, that kind of thing. You know, Jason Sudeikis is, you know, he's this like womanizing guy who's also, just, I mean, he's got so many great quotes in the movie, you know, bender over a barrel and show her the 50 states, that kind of thing. And Jason Bateman is always phenomenal straight man. And it's just funny how, like, the each one is, like, dumber than the last one. And they keep getting themselves into these, like, silly situations. Like, for example, like, Charlie, for example, they break into Colin Farrell's house, who, by the way, is fucking hysterical in this movie. Colin Farrell, not usually a big comedic guy, but, you know, you see him. You know, he made this like silly, like comb over for himself. He made himself fat. He's got this stupid little goatee. He's very crass humor. So stuff, a lot of things we haven't really seen from Colin Farrell in the past, which is, you know, it's a fun change of pace. But we see them like break into his house at some point and they like spill all of his cocaine and, you know, they're trying to put everything back and stuff like that. And I don't know. It's, I mean, everything in his house is funny, but. But yeah, just, I mean, the, like, some of the running gags, you know, between that Motherfucker Jones, you know, Jennifer Aniston is very, very, very funny in this movie. You know, holds her own compared, to a lot of the, like these heavyweight, you know, this is a male dominated comedy, obviously, but Jennifer Aniston steals a lot of the scenes, as Charlie Kelly's boss, who is, very, very much wants to sleep with Charlie Kelly, which he does not want, which is funny. Just seeing the juxtaposition, like, you know, you're playing with expectation, like that. Well, that's like one of the ongoing gags is that, like, she, like, you have this beautiful woman who is just throwing herself at a guy like Charlie Kelly, and then, like, he keeps explaining how horrible it is, and yeah, he's being sexually harassed and all that stuff, But like he keeps explaining how bad it is, and then Jason Sudeikis and Jason Bateman's characters are just like, yeah, that yours isn't that bad. So I don't know. It's just funny. I was surprised that this movie only had a 6.8 on IMDb. I feel like that's probably dropped significantly in recent years. I wonder if there's a way to track, because I mean the rating always goes down over time. Is there a way to view history? No, doesn't look like it. But yeah, no. I mean, especially just you know with the brand of humor. Like I said, it is. Not 2020. It would not get a 2021 stamp of approval. I feel like there's a lot of people who watch this movie for the first time today and not enjoy it just because of the brand of humor that it's in. But like, you know, I saw this movie. I don't think I saw it in theaters. I probably waited till it came out on HBO or you know on demand or something like that. So I would have been in 2011, call it 2012 when I saw it. So like, I was 19. Like this movie was right up my alley. This was everything I could ever want in a movie. And, you know, not to mention, you have three of my favorite actors in the movie, you know, at the time. So, and, you know, they still are. It's a bummer that this movie probably doesn't get as much love as it deserves. But it's, you know, it's also just silent times, you know. Kevin Spacey, I know we've talked about him a lot on here. Probably another reason why the movie has not aged well at all. You know, especially just given how, you know, his character's a murderer. This one, spoiler alert. Movie's 10 years old, statute of limitations. Tough look for him. Tough look for that guy. So there's a lot of things going against this movie. But at the same time, like, if you just want to see funny people performing great comedy, I think that that's what this movie is. You know, you have the six main characters in this movie, or all, seven if you want to throw Jamie Foxx in there. They're all at the top of their game. And, you know, the movie, the brand of humor in this one, like, it covers everything. There's, you know, well, I shouldn't say covers, but there's a lot of everything. You know, there's a lot of you know, sexism and racism jokes and, you know, sodomy jokes and things like that. And like, it's horrible. Like the stuff they're saying, it like is horrible. Again, like I said, like if you see the movie for the first time today, it's probably not a big hit, but as I've said before, like seeing these movies, and yes, like it's like part of the thing, you know, through 198 episodes now. Part of this project that I thought is interesting is like seeing movies, you know, with from a different perspective. Like maybe it's been a couple of years, maybe, you know, whether it's a movie that came out in like the 70s or 80s. Animal House is the example I always use. You know, there's no way Animal House is the hit it was if it came out today. But it's, I don't know. A lot of that's just a matter of perspective, because when you look at these like 2011, you know, that whole era, like this is what all the movies were. This is what all the, you know, studio comedies were. These were making lots and lots of money. So they were very, very popular. So I don't know. It's tough for me to hear like a lot of people say, like, oh, this movie's not funny, like this and that, blah, blah, blah. And like, yes, your perception can change over time, and that's completely fine. But at the same time, when this movie came out, it was very popular. I think, let me pull the box office numbers for this. So it was a very popular movie, popular enough to warrant a sequel. And, you know, at the time, every studio was making comedies like this. And it was a kind of a nice change of pace, because, you know, it wasn't that Judd Apatow, Seth Rogen, James Franco, Jonah Hill, like kind of movie. It was a different cast of guys doing a different brand of humor. And it was different. It was cool. The movie grossed $117 domestically. For an R-rated comedy, that's very, very impressive. And that could be a lot of things. I mean, Jason Sudeikis was he coming off? Was he still? Yeah, he was either on or coming off of SNL at that point, kind of at his peak. Charlie Kelly was a huge draw because, you know, you finally have, or Charlie Day. Yeah, I don't know why I keep calling him by their last names. Just call him Charlie. You know, he's finally making the transition from, you know, Always Sunny into feature films. And You know, you also had Jennifer Aniston, you had Kevin Spacey, you know, before everything came out, you have Colin Farrell, and so Jamie Foxx, like, you have all these big box office names in here, and it was a hit. It was a hit, and it was funny. It, you know, I remember critics liked it a lot. It was a nice change of pace from just some of the those like Apatow like stoner comedies or whatever, but it was different, it was new, it was funny, and people loved it. And I still love. I still think it's a great movie. So I will defend Horrible Bosses. I will defend Horrible Bosses as a funny movie. I will not advocate for every single joke in there, but there is a lot of good, really good comedy in here. If you know, if you want to break it down line by line, yeah, not great, but I enjoy this movie. I thoroughly enjoy this movie. So definitely worth the watch. All right. That note, let's get into some did you knows. Gonna do some did you knows, then we will rank the movie as we always do. And then we will get to the it is Wednesday, so we've been reviewing What If on Disney Plus. So we'll get to What If, which I'm actually really excited to talk about. So. Okay. Did you know Colin Farrell was heavily involved in the look of his character? The comb over and prosthetic stomach were his idea. He also decided his character would have an obsession with Chinese dragons and took part in developing the design for Bobby's apartment. Very, very funny. That, like, especially for Colin Farrell, who is just not a comedic actor. He's done some comedic roles, yeah. I think he actually has a Golden Globe for comedy, even though that doesn't mean much. But in Bruges, hilarious movie. You know, seeing him be able to have fun with a role like this is awesome. That, like, it's just, I love watching dramatic actors step into comedy. Sometimes they fail miserably, but you know, other times it's hilarious, especially when they can let kind of let loose with like what Colin Farrell was able to do here. So, okay, most or moving on, most I don't know what I was even gonna say. What is all right? The screenplay for this film was featured in the 2005 Blacklist, a list of the most liked unmade scripts of that year. So that makes sense to me. That makes a whole lot of sense to me. I think that the writing in this movie is really good. And you can tell that there's a lot of improv, but the premise is so simple that it sets up, you know, if you get talented enough actors, it puts them in a position to succeed. You know, you have three idiots who don't know what they're doing trying to plan murders and, you know, and shit goes awry. So that could be everything from, you know, when they're sneaking through his apartment, like they spill his cocaine, you know, Jason Sudeikis is like rubbing his, like, you know, his boss's toothbrush up his ass and stuff like that, not knowing about DNA evidence and things like that. So just all this, like, crazy, you know, all this shenanigans that they get into, it's funny. I think it's hilarious. And it's no surprise to me that the script was as well liked as it was. Script was actually written by, it was all right. So, a couple names on here: Michael Markowitz, John Francis Daly, and Jonathan Goldstein. John Francis Daly, who you'll recognize his face. You might recognize his face. He's a little older in this movie, but he is the little kid from Freaks and Geeks. Yeah, he is. I'm trying to find the name of the character. Sam Weir, pretty much the main character on Freaks and Geeks, the head geek, if you will. But you know, he's a man on this movie. He's actually gone on and had a pretty decent career as a writer. He wrote Spider-Man Homecoming, which we just did an episode about Spider-Man Far From Home. He wrote both Horrible Bosses movies, Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs. He was on Bones for a little bit. So yeah, so he's written some movies. Vacation Friends, which just came out on Hulu, which I actually kind of want to check out. I wouldn't mind that. John Cena, I was thinking about it the other day. Like, is John Cena the funniest guy in movies right now just because he's one of the very few guys who will actually do comedy? But anywho, next, did you know? And final, did you know? There was a good one. Okay. Vince Vaughn, Owen Wilson, Matthew McConaughey, Dax Shepard, Ashton Kutcher, Paul Rudd, Philip Seymour Hoffman, Jeff Bridges, and Tom Cruise were all rumored for roles at some point. Kutcher was attached to play the role of Dale, while Cruise, Hoffman, and Bridges were approached by New Line Cinema for the role of Dave Harkin. So Dale is Charlie's character. Which it's funny because like if listen to the Ashton Kutcher is a like he's a swimmer. You know, this guy's like 6'2", 6'3", something like that. This like super tall dude, super, you know, super handsome guy. And then they ended up getting the polar opposite of that, you know, just, you know, like Ashton Kutcher is a very sexy man. I have no problem admitting that. Charlie Kelly, Charlie Day, on the other hand, not so much. You know, he's this very, very little guy. He's got this funny voice. but I mean, he's just so fucking good in the movie. Tom Cruise, I think, you know, he would have been coming off of Tropic Thunder at this point when they were casting. So, yeah, I mean, it probably would have been a been there, done that kind of thing for him. So I'm actually kind of glad we don't see him in there. Philip Seymour Hoffman, rest in peace. He probably would have done a just a swell job as well. Jeff Bridges, I don't know. No, I really can't see him being, unless they went with a different direction for Harkin's character, because Dave Harkin's Kevin Spacey's character. I don't know. I can't. I mean, Jeff Bridges is also just so cool that it's tough to imagine, you know, a cool guy in there. And you know, Kevin Spacey, as we all know, is a real life villain. That, I mean, at the same time, he nailed that part. He did. I mean, you can kind of see some like Frank Underwood in there. So, and you know, and he, not to mention, he just looks like this like super rich like douchebag boss guy. Which I don't really think you get out of Jeff Bridges. I think Philip Seymour Hoffman could have done that though. That would have been pretty funny. But Ashton Kutcher as Dale. That's an interesting one. Looking at the rest of them, Vince Vaughn. You know, Vince Vaughn and Owen Wilson. I mean, you could probably swap them out with either Jason Sudeikis or Jason Bateman. Probably would have gotten the same result. Matthew McConaughey. I don't really know. Probably Jason Sudeikis' character, Dax Shepard, either Sudeikis or Bateman, Paul Rudd, definitely. Well, Paul Rudd could have been either Bateman or Charlie. Yeah, I don't know who's rumored for who, but I think that those are, I think they got the cast right. That's all I want to say about that. Although I really wish we'd see Ashton Kutcher in some more shit. I started watching The Guardian the other night, but I didn't catch the very beginning of it. And by the time I tuned in, there was like still more than 2 hours left. I was like, I couldn't do it because it was like 10 o'clock. But anywho, I'm gonna rank this movie scale of 1 to 5 hazmats, as we always do here, that we've done for 100 now 98 episodes. I'm gonna give Horrible Bosses 4 hazmats, 4 out of 5, and it's a damn funny movie, and I think it's one of the funniest movies of the last 10 years, one of the last great like studio comedies, and you know there's this like, you know Jason Bateman had a great run there as one of the go-to guys in comedy. I mean they all three of these guys still are. You know Bateman had a good run, Sudeikis had a good run, Charlie kind of you know he had a few movies. And then, but he always had Always Sunny, and Always Sunny is, you know, especially during that time, what he was able to do with Charlie Kelly, the character is, you know, unmatched, you know, funny. He, in my opinion, Charlie's the funniest character on Always Sunny. but, I mean, all five of them are absolutely hysterical. But yeah, I mean, this is just this is just a great comedy. And you might not like some of the jokes. And I won't blame you if you do, if you don't. But that being said, this movie's very funny, and I laugh every time I watch it. So there's that. Okay, all right, let's move on. Let's talk about What If episode 4 on Disney Plus. So spoiler alert, you know we're usually pro spoilers on the show, but if you have not watched episode 4 of What If, which just came out today, September 1st, but well, by the time this podcast drops, it'll be September 2nd, so it came out yesterday. So if you haven't watched it yet, zip it, turn it off, see you later. We'll see you on episode 199. All right, so this was, I think, the best one they've done yet. Maybe not the most like entertaining one that they've done, but as far as just like the actual like what if scenario and the execution of it. I mean, I think this one was just, you know, head and shoulders above the other three episodes that we've seen. The other three, they're kind of fun, kind of classic superheroes, and like the what if question is pretty simple, I think. And the consequences are pretty simple, like what if Peggy Carter was Captain America? What if T'Challa was, well, that one's a little more complex than that, but that was still like kind of a feel good episode, seeing T'Challa as Star Lord. Then last week's episode, what if the Avengers were killed off? So not definitely not happy, by any means, but still that one just wasn't too interesting in hindsight. But this week we tackled Doctor Strange, and the question is when he gets in that car accident. So if you've ever seen the original Doctor Strange, he gets in this accident and like he fucks up his hands in the accident, and he's this doctor. And he basically kind of drives himself mad trying to find a cure for his hands so they can go back to being a doctor, which leads him to sorcery, and then that leads him to becoming Doctor Strange. But when he gets in that car accident, he's got how am I Rachel? How did I blank on this? I feel really, really silly right now. What if I'm gonna kick myself as soon as I pull it up. Rachel McAdams. Couldn't think of the last name. Her character survives in the original Doctor Strange, but this one just asks the question like, what if she died instead? So instead of Doctor Strange losing his hands, what if he lost his heart? But it kind of leads down this really, really dark path, and like very early on, we see the same fate. He immediately starts looking for answers, which leads him to sorcery, and then he becomes Doctor Strange and this head sorcerer supreme, and he fights off this like evil shadow monster thing. I don't know, I've only seen Doctor Strange the movie just the once in theaters. I liked it, really liked it. It was very different, very trippy, and I've seen like bits and pieces of it every now and then. And then of course we've seen him pop up and Endgame, Infinity War, and Thor Ragnarok, and we know he's going to be in the new Spider-Man movie. But it's been a while since we've actually seen like a Doctor Strange movie. But we know that that's coming out next year with the Multiverse of Madness. He basically, all right. So like I said, we pretty much see the whole like rest of Doctor Strange the movie play out the same way, but. After those events settle, he's still heartbroken. So he goes back and he starts going through time to see if he could like if there's a way to save her and stuff like that. But every time he does something different that night, something else happens, and she ends up dying either way. So it's like no matter how hard he tries, she keeps dying. And then the Ancient One tells him that like it's a what is it, like a focal point or something like that? It's an absolute moment in time. So basically, no matter what happens, no matter what timeline is, like this moment in time can't change, because if it changes, like you wouldn't be you, or something like that, or something to that extent. So it's something that can't be altered with. So Doctor Strange kind of, drives himself mad, trying to fix this, which leads to a whole bunch of different timelines. And eventually there's a Doctor Strange versus an evil Doctor Strange fight, which is kind of trippy. And like the animation in this one was amazing. It was far better than I think all the other ones. This one was like, this is what was really, really cool about animation, because like I feel like we've just been kind of watching the Marvel movies like as cartoons beforehand, but this was something that they were like actually able to like have a great time animating, because the Doctor Strange movies are so visual and trippy anyway. So animation was a great medium for it. But eventually, so he's able to get her back, but of course at what cost? And he ends up destroying his own universe as a result of that. And we find out that he's actually able to interact with the Watcher, who is the narrator of the series, played by Jeff Wright. And that one I did not see coming. I was like, oh shit. So, and by the end of it, he's all alone in this like little like cocoon of nothing, like blank matter nothingness. And then the episode just ends. What's the line that the Watcher uses? It's like sometimes, like the what is it? The smallest moment you do can change the entire universe or can destroy a whole universe. It's one life, one moment, one choice can destroy an entire universe. So a dark ending, compared to all the other episodes we've seen, this is the first time where it's a dark ending. I mean, the Captain Carter one was not happy, I guess, but it's also the same way that Captain America ended, so I think we all know where it's going. But this one was like it was a sad ending, and then it just kind of cut out there. And I wouldn't be surprised. And so, like, we know that What If is going to be canon in the MCU. What those plans are to integrate the show into the movies, I don't know. I mean, we know Doctor Strange is going to be in Spider-Man, the next one. I don't know if he's going to be this like evil version of him. I think there, if you've seen the trailer, which pretty much the whole world has at this point, if you that's clearly not the Doctor Strange we all know and love. Something's up. And I mean, if that, I don't know if they're setting something up for Spider-Man. I don't know if they're setting something up for Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, maybe one of the other TV shows, The Eternals, maybe. I have no idea. I have absolutely no fucking idea what they're gonna do with it. But I think it's this one's cool because this was the first time I watched one of these episodes and I was like, holy shit, give me more. Like, where is this going? I actually like want to see this one. I said the little Captain Carter thing, like that'd be kind of cool to see in the movies. The T'Challa thing. I know we can't do that one anymore because it's Chadwick Boseman. And like last week, I said when we did a What If review, it was something to the effect of, I'm having a hard time enjoying the show because I don't know where any of it's going and how I should be reacting to like what's the plan with this stuff going forward. It's like I'm enjoying it. I'm enjoying the show as a whole, but I just don't know. I don't understand the weight of what we're watching exactly. This one was the first time I watched and I felt like okay, like this story isn't over. Like stuff was established in this episode that we're gonna need to see again. Like the fact that he was able to connect with the Watcher. The fact that he's, there's this timeline out there where he's by himself, and we know that the multiverse is going to be shown in like there's a movie called Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness. Like we know this is going to be addressed. We know like we've seen the end of Loki. Like we know how the multiverse is open now. And who knows what's gonna happen in Spider-Man. So like we know all this shit is coming. But this was the first time I was like, okay, like I could see this realistically being placed into a movie, and it's not just like a cool, like, oh, that's Captain Carter, like, there she is again. So it's not like a lame like reboot, because like a lot of the episodes so far is like, what if this character was that character, and this happened and this happened. This is the first time we saw like the entire movie play out exactly the same. And Captain Carter and Captain America were, very, very similar. But we saw this one play out literally exactly the same, and then it picked up afterwards. But it's just like he still has this, like, he's still grieving from the loss of the love of his life. So I could really, really see this one coming back soon. Whether, I don't know if it's going to be another episode, I don't know if it's going to be in one of the movies that's coming up, but I feel like the story isn't going away soon. And now that we know that Doctor Strange can talk to the Watcher, I think that's kind of cool. I think that, I could see the Watcher being a key character in the Multiverse of Madness, which comes out next year. So I'm psyched for that. Now I want to go back and watch the actual Doctor Strange now. So maybe I'll do that after this. Although I won't because I've been watching Haunting of Hill House. That's my go-to-bed show now. I know it's like it's not it's September, yeah, but I got my spookies early this year. So I wanted to watch some good old-fashioned horror. So I've been watching Haunting of Hill House, and last night I did two episodes. I did The Bentneck Lady and Two Storms, which is that episode where they kind of shot the whole thing in one shot. Best horror series I've ever seen, hands down. But yeah, Haunting of Hill House is just it's the writing on the show is so fucking incredible. The acting, the production design that they do, and it's really quite astonishing what they've been able to do. Anyway, so you know what? I actually think I'm gonna take this opportunity, sign off, and go watch another episode or two of Hill House. So hey, thank you all for listening. 198 episodes, we did it, guys. So episode 199 coming on Monday. 200 a week from today. Episode 200 is going to be 1 week from today. This weekend I have a wedding, so I'm actually officiating a wedding. So shout out love. I don't know how many movies I'm going to be able to actually see between now and then. So we'll see about that. I'm sure I'll watch something because it's me. But yeah, so we'll catch up with you guys on Monday. Until then, you can follow us on social media. We're at Quarantinema Pod, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can subscribe to the show, Spotify, iTunes, Apple Podcasts, you name it, we're there. So in the meantime, don't be a hero, stay inside, and watch a movie.